Welcome to Into the Garden with Leslie. It is almost the lusty month of May here. I hope lots of sex is happening in your garden. This is a G-rated show. I'm just talking about, you know, seed germination and pollination and all those kinds of things. It's actually sex. It's just sort of, it's wholesome and it's beautiful to see. Today, we are going to have a great interview with Madeline Hooper, who is the woman behind Garden Fit, which is the show behind how to see beautiful gardens all over the country and figure out how to improve our bodies while we're watching beautiful gardens. I know it's a crazy combination, but it's a really, really good one. Garden Fit streams on PBS, and Madeline is going to tell us all about it. So without further ado, let's get to the interview. So we are back, and we're talking with Madeline Hooper, who has been on the show before, and this fabulous show that she does called Garden Fit. This is the second season, and it's just such a wonderful thing for you all to watch because you're seeing these beautiful gardens, and who doesn't like to go visit beautiful gardens, even if it has to be on a screen? But then the purpose of the show is to deal with the most important garden tool that any of us has, and it is our bodies, which are not always younger than they were yesterday. Madeline, thank you for coming to chat with me. I can't wait to find out more about Garden Fit season two.
Thank you for inviting me.
No, it's great to see you. And I watched a couple of the episodes that you sent me, and it was really fun to see you have a new trainer that you're working with, Adam Sherston, and he looks up for the job. It's so fun to watch you walk around these beautiful gardens. So tell us what it was like. First of all, let's start with the decision to go to a season two, and you kind of switched gears in that the first season was geared toward real professional gardeners, really. And now you've gone toward artists. So tell us about the season two decision-making.
Well, it first started because season two was successful and so many people started to become aware of not only wanting to see more gardens, because we're all like that, but actually the role that their body plays in their gardening, which was great. And because I think we did enjoy being with people whose whole life was really gardening. You know, there were a few amateur gardeners. Most of them, you're quite right, Leslie, were professionals. And it occurred to me that going to visit artists, a big range of artists who also are passionate gardeners, would be just an interesting relationship to investigate and hear about. And it just turned out to be so different. And fortunately, Adam, my new partner in season two, is so interested in art and is a musician himself. So he's very sensitive and also a gardener. He loves to garden. So he's so sensitive to the same things that our guests were this season that we kind of had a love fest. I think with any new experience, seeing people who are creative, creating a garden while they are actually playing a flute, which to them sounds like the birds in their garden. I mean, there's such a relationship between these artists and their garden. It's absolutely breathtaking.
And what you mentioned before we started recording is that you could argue that all gardeners are artists on some level, and you and I are avid gardeners, and we love the nature part of it, and as almost every gardener does. Sounds like these people take it to a whole other level, right?
They do. We visited this wonderful guy called Jose Alvarez DOPA, and he's a visual artist. And I found him by seeing one of his paintings in an exhibition at the Berkshire Botanical Garden. And it just made me smile. It was like one of those things where you couldn't stop looking at it like a beautiful garden. Of course, I asked him if he gardened. He has a 2-acre garden of tropicals in Fort Lauderdale, Florida. And he actually uses nature's elements like feathers and porcupine quills and all kinds of things in his paintings.
Oh.
As a matter of fact, the canvas is sliced mica. So they look like paintings to the eye, but they're on a canvas, so to speak. But when you really investigate the elements in it as well as the colors in it, now that I've seen his garden, it's like literally a welcoming to his garden.
Are these works of art three-dimensional?
Well, he does some sculptural things, but these are pretty much flat, what I would call almost collage effects on a canvas.
Okay, interesting.
Yeah.
So, for instance, you said he brings things in from the garden or he just represents them with paint?
Both.
Oh, wow.
I mean, he mostly paints, but within the painting is this wonderful circle of these porcupine quills that he has organized perfectly that have some feathers from birds attached to it. It's just stunning.
That is so cool. And that was Jose Alvarez Dopa.
DOPA, those are his letters of what was his name before he moved to America. And he likes the resemblance of that because people couldn't, I guess, pronounce his name as well as he would like. So he changed it slightly when he moved here, but he is, very soulful and wants his heritage with him and his name. So that's
That's
sweet.
hilarious. And so
Yes.
if somebody like me, like in the line at the bank, Mr. Dopa, he would probably cringe. Sorry, Jose Alvarez. That sounds great. So the first one that you chose was Nicholas Varney, who is a jeweler, and he also brings in elements of the garden. And I thought it was so cool how you guys just literally sat down, you and Adam, and he just had things from his gardens, apples and oh, there was some, I think there was, it might have been a cantaloupe or something, and flowers. And he's like, yeah, see this shape, see this color, and see this piece of jewelry. And you were kind of drooling just a little bit because you like jewelry.
Little. That's just again another perfect example of an artist who literally is using elements and colors from the garden to express his creativity in the jewels that he creates, in the jewelry that he creates. And it is amazing to me that even though, you see a lot of jewelry, but if he can't get the color out of an emerald or a diamond, he uses the egg shells from his chickens, or he uses minerals that grow in the ground. So he's really mixing nature again in his art. They're inseparable.
There was a beautiful bracelet that was shown for quite a few minutes, which was nice because I liked looking at it. And it was, I think it was some gold, but a lot of eggshells from the chickens in his yard mixed with diamonds, right?
Yes.
It was
I
gorgeous.
mean, who does
I don't
that?
know. He does. Nicholas Varney does that.
And his farm and garden was wonderful. And he has a greenhouse, as you probably saw. So he's gardening all year round.
And lots of edibles, and he's feeding his family.
Lots of animals.
Was there a theme that ran through all of them besides the art? Do you feel like, I mean, maybe we've already hit on it, that it was just this intimate exchange with nature and their art? Would you agree that that's sort of what they all had in common? And how does that work with a musician? I'm curious.
Well, it works with the musician in terms of rhythm. But first, to answer your question, Leslie, yes, they all had that in common in such a variety of different ways. But we visited a flautist from the Boston Symphony Orchestra, and she literally is so enthralled by all of the very pretty much famous composers that were affected by nature. And so their compositions already have the sounds of birds. There's a sense of breeze in the way she plays her instrument that makes you really think that in her mind, she is playing with nature.
Wow.
And then we went to New Orleans and we visited someone who is a pianist, a jazz pianist. And Leslie loves rhythms, he loves pruning. And his music is like that. It's got the bounce that his garden has. It's just truly amazing.
That's so fun.
And this week, Alice Waters' episode is on. And Alice, who really brought this whole farm-to-table movement, really understood the health factor and the human factor of eating local, healthy grown food. I think watching her in her garden or just cook an egg was fantastic because, again, there's this appreciation for the quality of nature and how you handle it and how you presented or eat it. We were really taken by her also. So it's such a mix of people that
Yeah.
each one of them has a new unveiling of their relationship with nature. What they all had in common too was they get the right plant, right place, but they don't get, the right movement, right muscle.
Oh, right.
These people have been gardening for such a long time, Leslie, and they do not understand. They're going out to fix a plant and they don't realize that they could be fixing themselves at the same time. So it was fun to bring that element to these very enthusiastic people, who want a garden, like you said earlier, for the rest of their lives.
Yeah. And this is if you haven't, if you're one of the few who haven't watched the first season, the way that Madeline explains this to people is, you know, the way that this started is that you, who appear to be very fit, and I'm sure you always were, but being very fit and then being ready to use that body in those certain repetitive ways in the garden could be two different things. And this was you going to a personal trainer and saying, I need some help here. And then it really changed things for you, right? Tell us about it.
It did. It changed things because I really could not understand why my shoulders and neck hurt so much every day. I really could not connect the dots. And as soon as I went to this trainer, within a month, I think I've told you this before, I felt, wait, now I understand how to use my hip joint when I'm, you know, wanting to bend over or move to the ground. I just never thought about the activity in my body was very relevant to how I move, period. But certainly with the repetitive demands of gardening, it was essential. Really within no time, I think I started to form new habits basically because it felt better. It felt better in my mind because I felt like I'm aware of things that I wasn't aware of before, that it felt better to have the right form or, you know, posture, whatever terms make sense to each individual to really understand that there is a right way and a wrong way to do things. It's just that simple. And the more you do things the right way, the more you do things the right way. And that's how you get these new habits. It's just, you need that commitment, I guess, Leslie. I'm not sure what it is in the beginning to say, okay, it's so easy. Every time we drop something or every time we see a weed, we bend down a certain way. Well, if somebody photographed you picking out a weed and showed it to you, you'd say, oh, that doesn't look so helpful. Like, that's not how I want to look. And when I bend down now, and if I go into our squat position or, you know, I keep my back flat, I know I'm looking as good as my plants almost. I know it's silly, but the payoff, the rewards are endless.
Right. We're not doing this to look good. We're doing this to feel good.
Definitely not. Definitely not doing it to look good. It's, you're doing it so that your body feels great. And while you're making so much effort to know what your plants need.
Yeah.
Like you said earlier, your body's your most important gardening tool. So it's really important to do what each plant requires, but it's really important to do that for your body too. So there's a big difference between lifting correctly or reaching high, or, you know, where are your shoulders when you do that? Who thinks about that? You know, where is your head when you're just walking through the garden? So again, it starts with awareness, a little bit of a commitment that I can do this better and I want to. And so now being in my garden is not only more joyful, but I can multitask. So when people used to say, you know, you got to warm up before you play this sport, you know, don't go out on the tennis court unless you're, you know, warmed up a little. I never did that. And I never wanted to do that in the garden, but Adam has convinced me that as I walk out to get my tools from my house, you know, or as I'm going to look at a plant, that I can be stretching, I can be opening my arms, I can clasp them behind my back. You know, there's just so many, I guess, new routines in gardening that I would like to think through the show that more people will incorporate in their gardening experience.
I hear what you're saying about not wanting to take the time, but it sounds like you are not taking extra time. You know, you're walking to get that wheelbarrow. You are bending down to change your shoes and, oh, let's just tweak this and make sure this is warmed up and moving this. I think it's so smart. I'm beginning to play golf a little bit. And my husband is an avid golfer and he does a bunch of stretches before he starts hitting. And I thought for a while, well, how silly is that? And then I'm like, Wait a minute. What, maybe it would have felt a little sillier back in my 30s and 40s, but no, that's not silly. Every opportunity we get, you know, motion is lotion, and let's just pay attention to these things.
Exactly.
In the two that I watched, let's just tell the listeners about these two very quickly. And if you have any others of the episodes that I haven't watched, just really simple things that are probably common to all, to everybody who moves around their garden. The first one was Nicholas Varney, and he was having lower back pain.
Yes.
That is, you know, kind of new news to me, not through that, but just recently. I'm like, oh yeah, that actually is hip flexor tightness. And so you had him tilting his pelvis backwards and forwards, right?
Right.
It helped him?
Not only did it help him, you know, I happen to see him often because he lives near where I am. And he keeps telling me I'm feeling so much better. You know, again, he just hated to weed and he didn't really know why. And I think there are activities in the garden that you just sort of block out and don't do enough because it just doesn't feel right, or you really are creating aches and pains or certain stresses. But using your hips is so critical to so many things. It's like the same way as not people will say, well, use your legs when you lift things. Well, that's fine, but you cannot use your back when you lift things. So that's only half the equation. So to understand that you can put your body in a position where you can lift something reasonable, because you never want to overdo something like that, because your legs and your body are able to help and your back doesn't have to be in that equation. Also, Adam is very clever about stretches and preparing the body to feel the parts that need to be active and the ones that don't. And that's, I think, like again, the benefit, hopefully, of the show is that you see him teaching and showing some of these things. And like with Nicholas, Adam had us with our knees on the ground and then put a flower pot as a leverage thing behind each of us to see how flexible we were, our thighs and our hip flexors. And again, I just didn't know where hip flexors were before.
No.
It's just like, oh, okay, now I got
Yeah, I
it.
got it.
So sometimes, yeah, it takes a minute. With Frances Palmer, the ceramicist who we did the second time, she knew even when we first spoke about the show that she wanted to focus on posture.
But was something hurting her? So I watched that show too, and you
Right?
guys stood against a tree, and I immediately
Right.
went to a doorway and tried to emulate what you were doing. But did she hurt, or did she, was that more preventative?
She didn't hurt, but she would get uncomfortable. Don't forget, she's over a potter's wheel.
Right.
She's gardening, 5 and 6 in the morning. So the amount of flowers that she collects every day is more than probably you and I deadhead and collect maybe in weeks. She just is in a studio full of these big containers of dahlias and fabulous flowers. So I think what she wanted to make sure was that she could understand how to keep her posture. And, like have a little more in-depth value to the parts of your body that you have to pay attention to be straight.
Yeah.
The other thing that I think Adam did in that episode, which is he's very honest about the fact, well, you can put yourself against a tree and find you're in a tree. But as he said, as you know, Leslie, that was to understand what perfect posture feels like. But you don't have to stay in perfect posture. As a matter of fact, you can't, because once you start moving or bending, I mean, it's just totally unrealistic to be that stacked up.
Right.
But you don't want to purposely unstack your body. So if it starts with your head, I keep thinking, is my head forward? Which you can see just looking at me looks not right. It's like this. All of a sudden, the whole rest of my body starts to line up under it. So I think that those two things were very important themes throughout.
Well, yeah, and so I was going to go now to the ones that I haven't seen. Were the problem areas of the body, did they repeat each other, or did you get into other parts?
Well, again, I can't sing Adam's praises enough because he had 13 or more different ways to teach people the correct movement while you're doing certain garden activities, and in fact, just walking in the garden. There's so many reasons now that I've learned this that make your back hurt or parts of your back hurt. So, I had issues with the top of my back and shoulders. Most people have lower back pain. So I think we went through all of that. But in each episode, we let the gardener, the guest, ask us what they wanted to have fixed. And what was the thing that they thought was the most in their way when they were gardening that their body wasn't comfortable doing? So there were a few things, though, that were ahas, I think, for everybody. One was the position of your shoulders. So a lot of people, when they're raising their arm, let's say to prune,
Yeah.
reach with their shoulders. So you're already, you just put your arms up. Yeah, you see how you get crunched?
Yeah.
Your shoulder blades go up and your neck gets sort of encircled by your arms. That is really bad for your shoulders. So Adam made a big point of teaching people to stay aware of keeping your shoulders down and just reaching with your arms. You don't
Okay.
gain any extra inches there. And if you do, get a step stool, he said. Because you, there are just certain moves it will abuse your body if you do it often. And that's one of them. So for a lot of people, it was just again learning what not to do, not necessarily that they were even doing it wrong. When we went to Jose, he did a lot of clipping. Also, he has these huge tropical plants. And every time he clipped, his elbows were out,
Okay, that makes sense.
for using shears primarily. And Adam said, just turn your arms in, rotate your arms in. You can still move your wrists to do whatever you want, but don't do this, because again, that was very disruptive to the shoulder joints
Okay.
and would end up causing pain throughout your upper back and neck, possibly. So it was kind of more, okay, I got that. I'm not going to do that.
Okay. And have you heard from any of the guests since the visits to them? Obviously Nicholas Varney, any of the others?
Yeah, I've heard from Frances. I knew again from her that she was going to do whatever Adam suggested because she was very taken by that. I would say that now I've spoken to about half of them since we were done filming and all of that. But I certainly it's very rewarding because, like Frances, she just literally said, "I love my episode." And it's hard. It's even like when you do all these interviews, you want to show off the value of people and who they really are. We didn't want to distort things just because we were going to show that because it was beautiful. It had to be shown because it was relevant to, their inner feelings or how they approach gardening, not to mention all of them talked so much about their art. And that was a big segment that we could show off what they do creatively, both places, the garden and also in their art world. So that was nice.
Extra interesting content, and for all these different, really different talents. How did you choose who to go see? Did you have to whinny down a long, long list?
A little bit by luck and naivete. Being a gardener for such a long time, visiting gardens, going to lectures, I'm very involved with the Berkshire Botanical Garden. My husband and I are both on their board. We've just met so many people, and they all referred me to artists who garden. That was much harder than people who garden because, again, I think if I called you, you would give me five fabulous names, if not 50, right?
Of people who garden, yeah.
Yeah. So this was a little bit more difficult. And also, we didn't want to just go to people who paint or sculptors or, we really wanted this variety that fortunately we got. So it took a minute, but it was all through personal referral.
Oh, cool.
I think about a month and a half, we had the whole list. And then there were people like Frances Palmer who recommended somebody, a dear friend of her, and Marion Brenner, who's one of the top photographers for garden books.
Oh, nice.
Yes, it was wonderful visiting her. Her garden was absolutely spectacular. So in some cases, the guests suggested other people.
Okay. What's it like, a typical visit when you go to somebody's garden? How many days are you there? How long does it take to set up? I was just on this little cable show for Virginia Homegrown, and I was my little section of pruning hydrangeas probably represented about 10 minutes of the television show. It took a while, I gotta tell you, it took a while. So this must be days.
It's not days, actually. Sometimes it's hard to do something that's a shorter segment than a bigger segment. We talk a lot on the phone, meaning it's sort of my job to really get to know that guest and kind of what they like. And they, of course, show me pictures of their garden. So I already know, if it's going to be a tropical garden or, pollinating garden or whatever. And I get a real sense about that. But we scout. So we go one day and we spend the whole day pretty much with them, learning right there when they started their garden, what they put in it, how they feel about gardening, and certainly and habitats. All of these people are way past organic. That's not even a subject to bring up, with everything that exists, in their garden. And then after that, we sit down as a team, the production team, and Adam and myself, and we really plot out what we're going to feature because there's always a smorgasbord of much more. We can't get everything, in a half an hour show. So we also talk to them about, obviously, Adam sits down and talks to them a lot about their bodies and what are the things that interest them. And he goes over with them the day before the things that he sort of identified would be valuable for them, you know, to really learn. And they get really comfortable with what's going to go on. I mean, you know, we're not really promoting exercise.
Right.
It's much more simple, easy changes that you do with your body. And then we really listen to them this time about their art, how they want to show it to us with the musicians they played for us, with the culinary pioneers they fed us. It was just such an interesting array, again, of people. I mean, with Frances, you know, in the end, you know, I was like picking flowers and wanting to put them in all her vases. I mean, it was just so much fun. So that happens the day before. And then we shoot another day, Leslie, and that's it.
Oh, that's all.
That day is from 7 to 7. It's a long day.
It's a long day.
But we really don't have the time. We have to move. We've had 13 episodes. And you want to do it during the summer season. So it's, you're kind of on the road a lot. And our normal pattern would be travel, scout, shoot, travel, scout, shoot. So, I mean, I think along the way, we're always learning about these people, you know, and a lot of them have written books, which we've read, but it really is a 2 day of intensive relationship building and shooting.
And if you get unlucky with the weather?
I don't know how this has happened. We have only been one place where it rained in 26 episodes.
That's amazing.
Can you imagine? And the place where it rained, which was the second episode we did in season 1, it rained, then it stopped raining. Then it rained and it stopped raining. And somehow we got it all done. In season 1, we spent more time. We've learned how to do it in more efficient time because in season 1, we would go back again.
Oh,
season 2, we thought that isn't really necessary. The job is getting done in terms of really teaching our audience what they need to know about that particular body move or, you know, their form in doing some of these tasks. So it's not that much.
Oh, good. I'm glad for you because it sounds like a lot of work as it is. I think I do have a vague memory of you going back to the person, and it was after several weeks or something. So they theoretically would have been implementing whatever advice came from the trainer and then to check on. So how are we doing here?
Yeah, exactly. So that really worked because everybody took to heart everything as they have this season. But I don't think it wasn't worth it just for that, because again, we're really just trying to educate everybody.
Yes.
About how to really get up and down from the ground correctly. So many common things that all gardeners have to deal with. And I think that we wanted to just make sure we got through all of that and spent the time putting in a larger diversity rather than just following up to see how things went.
Because it's aimed at everybody. And these are the special people who get to show off their talents to us. We get to see their fabulous gardens, but it's really trying to educate many, many of us who have, well, guess what? What do we have in common? We have bodies.
We have bodies.
that don't seem to get younger, even though we try.
Yeah. Crazy. I do think that, you know, your relationship with your garden, you know, it's a wonderland. And I do really believe, I know this sounds a little pie in the sky, that it is the fountain of youth, because you and I know that our gardens get better every year. Every garden does. You know, plants just come into their own or reshape themselves or are more floriferous or whatever the situation is, get better asparagus year after year.
Yes.
I think you get better as a person and physically better at repeating these tasks, which makes you really stay fit to garden. And I think that's a really important, you know, incentive for people. And it's only people who abuse their bodies who cannot continue to garden.
Yeah. Yeah, if you're smart enough to do it the right way.
You know, it could be people have injured themselves or, you know, I've noticed that a lot of people, you know, people who have had, let's say, knee replacements or shoulder replacements have injured themselves in their youth. They haven't injured themselves from gardening. So if you're lucky enough to kind of have all your joints, your original joints, and are fairly healthy, you know, you're someone who likes to be physically active. I really don't believe maybe you won't be able to lift the, you know, 25-pound bag of, you know, potting soil, but that's okay. You're still potting.
Yes, you know, you are. You know,
so I think that's important. So I think gardens are a way to a happy life.
I
Totally agree with you. And the more studies that are done on this, the better. And it's everything from the birds and the fresh air to the physical activity, and hopefully we're all doing it sort of right, to the microbes under your fingernails. And it's all very good stuff. Do you feel, or did Adam go into in any of the other episodes, just general, I don't know, healthy traits that are not specific to an ailment that was addressed for a particular guest that you had? For example, did he advocate for yoga, weightlifting, apart from the specific movements like, oh, you're hurting here, let's try this? Were there other larger sort of regimens that he would recommend?
He probably would. He didn't. I mean, he's so knowledgeable. He's written books, on the value of the weight of your body and how to improve your body just using your own body weight. So he's re really quite involved with all of that. I don't think he feels that people need to work out.
Oh.
I guess exercises that they do all the time. But what he does really say is that if you can keep your body flexible, figure out why and improve that. So, in other words, we can say everything we want, but if you can't use your knees correctly, it's very hard to guard.
Yeah.
He'll say things like, make sure you use knee pads. It's not like he thinks that your body is so perfectly set up that you can, rest on your knees for an hour and weed without hurting them or, feeling somewhat sore. So, he does have recommendations about things you should do to help you, but he doesn't, I don't think, feel that a certain routine, a regime is necessary. He is very flexible and he does work out every single day. It's hard to keep up with him, but I really enjoy that now. I mean, even if I, I'd go to the gym with him if there was one where we were staying, and I'd work for about 20 minutes, a half an hour, stretching and, just doing things to really rejuvenate my whole body from standing all day. And then I would leave him there. He would stay another like a half an hour, 45 minutes. I mean, he really enjoys it. So he's not someone who really dictates anything. He's really open to what your body, how your body feels. Like you're not abusing it if it doesn't hurt. Right? So keep doing what you're doing. I think that's what he would say. It's just that there are certain principles that would ensure that you don't ever start abusing your body. And that's what people should know. That's part of getting older and gardening and still enjoying it and feeling so physically capable is to have an awareness of how to lift heavy things. So you don't have one moment where you're lifting something or pushing a wheelbarrow, with just too much weight in it and your back goes out. That's what you don't want to have happen. You don't want to injure yourself while you're gardening. I mean, that's just silly.
No, that pickleball, I can sort of understand it. Gardening, no. How would you say that you've changed in your gardening? Are there, I know that you said that you are much more interested in how your body reacts, warming it up and good posture and good practices. Do you feel like it has actually made it so that you can garden harder or just sort of maintain the level that you want to without, and when I say harder, I mean more hours or trying lifting heavy things or like, no, we can go all day here because of your new practices? Or are you just like, they say that to maintain is so much easier than to obtain. Have you obtained, or are you just like, no, let's just maintain and do it better?
Honestly, I feel like I could do anything for as long as I want in my garden. I just take breaks.
Oh, okay.
I will not weed like I used to. I would see a bed and say, okay, I'm going to weed this bed. I have a large garden. And I would just weed for hours. And of course, I'd wake up the next morning. In this case, my back would hurt, or my knees would hurt. So I'm smarter about changing tasks so I'm not overstressing one part of my body for too long. So I wouldn't be pruning, let's say I'm pruning a tree or something and I'm constantly reaching up. You can do that for about a half an hour, and then you really want to stop, let that muscle group relax and go to some other thing like weeding, or deadheading or somehow change the parts of your body that you're using. So I couldn't do the same thing for hours on end, but I really feel totally in control of my body, Leslie. That is like a joy I never expected. It's sort of like dancing. Like, I don't know about you, but I love to dance. And, the music comes on and I'm just in another world. I have gotten that close to my garden where it's the same feeling. It's just, we're in it. You know, I think I'm my garden, actually. I've gone, you know, like too far the other way. I just get lost in it. And I don't ever stress my body. If I feel like I can't do something, I really stop and think about it. So I'm very lucky because I've been around these two trainers. You know, I've really learned by watching so many other people get it wrong,
right,
that I can see myself in all those scenarios. And so I think just a delightful advantage, which is why I'm so eager for everybody else to get into this simple headset of you can do it all, just do it the correct way.
Yeah. And you'll learn this from the shows. Yeah. All right. So I do want to ask you if the shows from this season have made you take your relationship with nature to that stronger point that you were talking about with your guests. But before I do that, let's get down on the ground in the dirt. How do you weed a bed? You're like, oh my God, look at all that chickweed. We got to get to work here. This will be fun. I mean, I love weeding.
I like weeding. Person. It's like cleaning.
It's like, oh, and then I get to put it all in that bucket and then it goes in my compost pile. Yeah. Like, what could be more fun?
It's all good.
And I grab if I'm just going for one or two, generally do one knee down. But if I'm like, no, I am hitting this hard, it's going to be so fun, I grab a knee pad and I get down on it and I just kind of scooch around. And if I have to reach for something, I sort of go into a plank and I feel like I'm moving decently well and trying not to work one side of my body too hard, which I know could be easy. What are your techniques?
Yours.
I
think you just said it in a nutshell. I do like this squatting armchair position that we established in season one.
Yeah.
Because it has made me stronger. So that's part of sort of the head rush of feeling I'm very capable to do this. So if I'm not going to weed for a long time, like if I'm just bending down to take out a couple of weeds that are in front of me, and they're weeds that I can take out with one hand.
Right.
Right. That's a kind of a different physical effort. I will go into the armchair and I will scoot from side to side using the opposite arm that I'm weeding with, leaning on my leg. And that really helps, you know, the upper body weight being supported by your leg while you're doing that. But just like you, if I'm really weeding a bed, I'm on my knees and I always use a knee pad. Sometimes I use a knee pad and I have knee pads on my clothes, you know.
Oh, wow.
Hands. Yeah, because my knees work and I don't want to not have them in that condition, right? So I do scooch around and this is what I tell a lot of people. There are ways where if you're an experienced gardener, you've cut the corner. Like I've seen people weed and leave a pile next to them. Then they got to go back and pick it up again, right? Into some container. It's like, that's why they invented trucks. You know, that's why wheelbarrows move. They have wheels. I mean, so I think learning the right tools a bit, you know, keeping your tools sharp. I know how many times have you heard that or said that? I think this is part of the discipline of the joy of something. You really need to be prepared. So I really take more tools. I tell everybody, just take more tools in a cart, a container, however you're moving around your garden than you think you're going to need, because then you also have this confidence that if you happen to see a branch that's split, or you just don't like the shape of the way that lilac tree looks now that it's bloomed, your clippers are right there.
Yeah.
So it's important to do what you, like you just said, what you feel good about doing and keep doing it.
But as you said, Madeline, to not do it for so long that you do start to get sore.
Right.
Being on your knees for hours at a time is not a good idea.
No.
So that's when you say, okay, now I'm going to take a walk to the backyard where I know that branch needs this saw and we'll just stand up and use our arms for a little bit, you know, or whatever it is. When I ran a gardening business here in Charlottesville. And before I did that, I was still teaching school up in Greenwich, Connecticut. And I worked for a gardener on Saturdays and after school. And I quickly realized that I had accidentally stumbled into one of the joys of personal gardening, which is doing whatever the heck you want instead of finish that bed, finish this chore. The client needs to know that we're done. You can't just leave your tools and wander to the backyard and start something else that's fun,
right,
for a client. It needs to be finished. It needs to be done and dusted. It needs to be tidy. And so I loved running my business, but that was not a part I liked. I love the wandering around bit and picking and having your tools with you. I totally agree. But then again, If you don't have one and it is time for a walk because you've been in one position too long, swing your arms, move your butt, right?
Yeah, I think of those breaks as rewards.
Okay.
So when I go from, let's say, pruning to weeding, I don't just go there, which I used to do. I literally stretch again. You know, I might do something with my body or just stand there and really enjoy the garden with my eyes, which so affects how well you're going to do the next chore.
Right.
Again, that's just part of, you know, I used to like work all day, like really 4 or 5 hours. And at the end of the day, kind of, I was too tired to even take a back look at how does the garden look? And now I think if you stop just a little more often and really just look at one flower that you smiled back at, you know, just take one moment. It's not like you're not enjoying caring for it, but you should enjoy the results of that caring a little more often. So I think we should be giving ourselves personal glimpses of how beautiful nature is. You know, it's how you stop. If you see a bird, don't you stop if you see a beautiful bird fly
right,
or a butterfly? So I think we should do that more often in the garden.
I have a handy little habit of, you know, going at it and then realizing that it's time for the end of the day and it'll be a great shower. But before that, hey, let's grab a Coors Light and walk around.
Totally.
Maybe not the healthiest habit. It could be water, it could be seltzer, it could be anything, but just, you know, a cool drink in your hand and you're still walking and you're still admiring and making a list for the next day or the next week or whenever. But to take the time to enjoy it, really important.
I think making those lists, what you bring up, I also think a new habit that I have is photographing the garden. So we all have our phones with us, right? Pretty much everybody does.
Yes.
And there just might be one moment where I'm either recording when something's blooming, or I just like the way this combination looks, or I just feel like taking a picture of a tree. And I think that's part of having the memory of that moment. There's nothing that's more present than being in a garden. You're with everything that's happening that second, and you're part of that. So I think anything that you do that keeps you there, including a beer. I mean, the other thing is, you know, we don't really talk about this on the show, but as gardeners, you know, I've talked about this with so many of my gardening friends, you need water with you, right? I mean, you would not let a plant dry up. So you can't let your body, you know, get thirsty. That's so unhealthy. So I think those sips, which I used to literally just gulp, just stand up and drink and look around.
Yeah. And maybe stick one leg out behind the other and stretch those hip flexors or something to just take advantage of the moment. What the rest shouldn't be, because I know I've done this before, is just like, oh, I've been at this so long, I'm going to just go sit in that chair that I never sit in. And I will pull out my phone, I will hunch my shoulders, and I will be still for 10 to 15 minutes, after which time I've taken away the magic of the nature. And I'm all stiff.
Yeah.
Bad idea. Keep moving through the breaks a little bit, right?
Yeah. I think you can keep moving through you should be moving through the breaks. I think to stop like that and really just do something else for 15 minutes is hard. It's very disruptive. I agree with you. I mean, I need to almost make myself stay focused at what I'm doing. No, I think you're absolutely right about that.
So getting back to how you, Madeline, have changed as a gardener, just concentrating on this season. So these people, you were amazed by their connection with nature. And it's guaranteed that you always had it because you wouldn't have been a gardener if you didn't.
Right.
But have you seen it enhanced? And if you have, how has it been enhanced by these people?
Well, in a big way, I think I have been enhanced by this whole experience, because seeing different people in their garden, you see their personality again through it, or their art through it. I've learned so much about different approaches and this whole idea of, I think you touched on this before, Leslie, that there isn't a right or wrong way. Everything doesn't have to have a focal point. You know, the beds don't have to line up a certain way. This isn't the only place you can put vegetables, you know, because people are putting obviously in flower beds. So I think the idea that it's yours, that I can do whatever I want, that, you know, I remember growing coleus and people were taking a stroll through my garden. They said, why are you planting that? You can get that in a supermarket. And I thought, that's a little snobby, you know, planting it because those leaves are absolutely drop dead gorgeous, you know? So I think that it should be your own world. And every single person that we visited really had such a unique garden. Not two are the same. And I think unless you have a, let's say, hire a landscape company that does the same hedging, that uses the same materials, you know, which I actually see, you know, if you're going through Palm Beach, you see
right.
a similar narrative of the type of plants that are used and how they are managed by humans. I think that the whole thing is that it is a creative process. It is your art canvas, right?
Yeah.
And you should really feel loose about it. I used to think, oh my God, if a plant died, what did I do wrong? And I think I probably did something wrong. And then I try to figure that out, or I don't. I just put a different plant there. I mean, I don't get myself so caught up in those kinds of, you know, what would everybody think if I did this, or how, you know, I just want to like something where I put it, or a relationship between plants, or, you know, a vine growing up a bush to me is heaven. So it might be the wrong vine in the wrong bush, but to me, it's just perfect. So I think being your own self in your garden is really great.
Yeah, getting in touch with things that way, because, you know, we're out there and we're digging in the dirt. It's just, it is the best thing ever, that gardening, right?
It is. I really think that people think of it as a hobby, and I'm beginning to think that this has to be life. With my one grandchild now, I mean, I have him gardening. He's two.
You know, that's awesome.
And of course, his dad and my daughter also are, you know, my daughter's into potted plants, and Drew is into, they have a lovely garden. So their son would be influenced that way anyway. But I really mm-hmm. feel when we look at things together, or if I dig in the earth and show him the worms and what lives there, that you just grow up knowing this is normal.
Yes.
This isn't something extra that I do. This is where I get my food. This is where I get to feel really good about the world.
It's such a beautiful lesson for children, as opposed to some people who would have grown up thinking, oh yeah, I should get in touch with nature. Well, actually, you are part of nature.
Exactly. You're in touch.
And, right? Yeah, you're in touch. And you, even the people who aren't very in touch, who live in high rises and, you know, walk by a bush and that's sort of it. Yeah, they're still, you know, they are still ecological beings. And so
absolutely.
If you can teach young people to, you know, that's what I do with that with my grandchildren too. And one family is really into it, and the other family has got four small children.
Right.
They're just trying to get through the day.
Yeah.
Yeah. And yet I get there and they're like, are we going to go gardening? And I'm like, well, actually, no, it's 37 and it's raining. So no, we're not doing that today, but we can read some books about it.
That's lovely, Leslie, because they know that that's your life, do you know, and they
oh, yeah.
want to be in that world. And I think that that's how people feel comfortable doing things. It's like learning how to cook from your mother or your grandmother or your grandfather. You know, I mean,
yeah,
I feel like the basics are what's going to heal the world. If that can come, it'll come from just living nicely every day. With kindness, of course, but you have to be kind to plants. You know, you can't step on them. You can't not feed them. You know, they need compost, or, you know, they need stuff. And I think it's a good responsibility to teach children, and a lovely responsibility to grow up having.
Absolutely. And it's a running joke that, oh, Lulu, she's not very good at car seats. It takes me like 10 minutes to buckle these kids in. I'm like, oh my God, how does this work? But she's good at gardening.
I think that's a wonderful reputation.
I mean, those car seats, have you done that? Those are hard.
I have done that, and they're hard. You know, there are some things that are just hard that you have to do, and that's one of them, because statistics about what happens to children in cars is still pretty frightening. But it has gone down because so many people have car seats and have been so responsible about really going through the agony of the child, you know, wiggling, but you finally get them in there.
Yeah. And then they might take a nap, and that's
yeah. Then they nap and you have a minute, just a minute.
Exactly. So we went down, we're getting a little bit away from your show. Sorry about that.
Okay.
So tell my listeners how to watch this wonderful show, Garden Fit.
Lovely. So it's streaming on pbs.org/GardenFit. The public broadcasting stations that are showing it, some of them have already started. Some don't even start the series until, you know, kind of the end of April, May, when it's a little bit more of a gardening season throughout the country. So I would just look at your, you know, total local listings to see if you know, if you watch it on TV, you certainly can mirror it on your TV through PBS. And if you want any of that information, you can just go to our website, which is GardenFit. And we have, of course, links to everything and our socials, where Adam and I are definitely showing people aspects of the show, but also doing our own GardenFit windows to activities that you should be doing at home, you know, how to bend, how to stand up, just again, to help people who are just great gardeners, but are really interested in keeping their body in a healthy way. So many people, so many of my friends have stopped hurting because I've shown them a few things. So it's not that hard. Our socials are, I hope, very helpful. People seem to really like them. We get a lot of nice response, you know, people saying, you know, can I do this? Can I do that? It's, we can't personally answer all of them. So I don't want to overpromise, but at least you can see these things being done. And Adam really teaching me and we demonstrate the right and wrong way of doing things. I think that people are so used to getting information online now that it's a great thing. I mean, I'm, you know, certainly do that. But once you see the right way, you got to go out there and develop your own habit.
Right.
You know, so I can say, you know, stack your spine and put your head, you know, over your shoulders and over your hips, but you kind of got to go out and play with that a little bit and find your posture.
So sorry, say that again, gardenfit.fit.
Gardenfit.fit.
.fit is the website, and then the socials. And would you say that you're bigger on Facebook than you are on Instagram, or vice versa? What's the best social to go to?
Instagram is probably... We put everything that we put on Instagram also on Facebook, but we just seem to have, you know, many, many more followers on Instagram. And
great.
Now that we've introduced a new season, we have so many new followers. It's kind of exciting. You know,
that is very
more
exciting.
People are getting garden fit.
You're just like Johnny Appleseed spreading the good word about keeping that most important garden tool fit. So thank you for that, Madeline. I really appreciate your coming to chat with me.
I love talking to you. Thank you.
Good. You're welcome. Y'all hang on, and we're going to talk about what is going on in your garden right now, or maybe my garden, because, you know, I'm kind of selfish that way, but I will be back in just a moment.
Welcome back. Madeline Hooper, do you know, this woman is so impressive. She had a long career in marketing. She had a very nice option of just settling down into her gardening life, staying fit all by herself. She didn't need to do this show, but she's fascinated by this topic because she's been so improved in her aches and pains. And she's kind of doing this show for all of us. By the way, she was also a highly ranked amateur dancer who competed nationally. So there's that. A multifaceted woman and really fun to talk to. Garden Fit is the name of the show. Gardenfit.fit. is the name of the website where you can find out more. And I don't know if she can take away every single ache and pain that we have, but I know she can help us improve just by following a few simple guidelines that I've paid attention to. I definitely feel better. And I would like to put in a quick word, not for my sponsor, because I don't have any sponsors anymore. You guys are my sponsors, and thank you for contributing to Into the Garden with Leslie. But Monrovia is the company that makes it possible for Garden Fit, the show, to exist. They've been a really good support for Madeline and her team. And we all love Monrovia plants. And if you buy some this spring, you can think about what good Monrovia is doing for everybody's most important garden tool, the human body of the gardener. Okay, so what's happening in my garden right now, you might ask? Well, the pansies are still holding up, but we're facing a week of summer in April, right at the end of April and into May. So once my blue and white guys fade away, I'm wondering what my little understory of splash of color around the back patio is going to be. And in the bowling alley, I have some plectranthus going. That's kind of muted. Oh, I also have saved seeds of this cool old-fashioned petunia that I grow that is a real, you know, what do they call it? A drooler? No, spiller, thriller, filler, spiller. So drooler, spiller out of pots that I've used before. But in this case, I'm going to try to grow this thing along the ground, and it has kind of pink and purpley blooms. The seedlings that I brought along are about the size of pinpricks, and I was sick of taking care of them, so I did plant them. We'll see if they survive, you know, with a root system that's not even the size of a pea. It's kind of easy to dry up and blow away, but we'll see what I can do. The two types of plectranthus, which I keep as indoor plants in winter, are extremely easy to propagate from, and they're really fun to have as filler in the garden as annuals. One of them is the silverleaf Plectranthus argentatus, native to Australia. It's argentatus, I think, means silver, and it is indeed silver. Sad that it's not one of our native plants, but it's easy. It's beautiful. It's a great plant also for a container, but it kind of goes along on the ground, and then you can layer it and get a new piece if you wanted to transplant it someplace else. It's drought resistant, it's rabbit resistant, and I do have a bunny problem here. So I'm going to like that to meander in between some other newer, small, you know, because they're new perennials that I have that'll help me to keep the mulch look at bay. And the other one that I love can take a bit of shade. It doesn't sprawl as much. It gets to be about 1 foot by 1 foot tall, and it's the darker leaf one that grows the purple flowers. I think most people call it Mona Lavender Plectranthus. By the end of the summer, it'll be a really nice thing that's coming up in between, I don't know, you know, my cast iron plant and hostas and ferns and things like that. Sadly, once again, it is not a native, but I do think it's bunny resistant, and I think it'll serve me well. So once I get those two indoor plants of Plectranthus, the two different types, the argentatus and the Mona Lavender, through my dubious regimen of care as indoor plants over winter, and if and when, and they have survived to the spring, then I pinch off the ends of the now meager foliage, and I put those ends under soil, under a clear plastic bag, and under grow lights. And after a couple weeks, if you keep them moist, they will grow roots. Tiny little specimens, about an inch across. That's what I ended up with, but hey, they're free. And like I said, my new garden is small, but there's some mulch to cover, so I'm willing to let those ramble in the blank spaces this summer, and maybe some of them next summer, until I get some better native choices, which are also hopefully perennials in those spots. You may have heard me mention that I am not a fan of irrigation systems, and I certainly wouldn't have one for this tiny spot, but I have invested $19 into a soaker hose, and it's going to be so satisfying. I've actually already started because we're in a little bit of a, hey, it's spring, can we have some rain now? But I can thoroughly water a good section of my garden in about 90 minutes, and I haven't wasted a drop. And then I simply pack up the hose and move it to the next section. And by my experience so far, there are only 5 sections in this whole place. So we'll make quick work of actually pretending like we have an irrigation system. In my last episode, I mentioned that I might have made a little bit of a boo-boo in terms of estimating sun exposure in what I call the bowling alley garden between the back of my house and a retaining wall. 2 weeks later, it's still too soon to know, but I have made a couple of purchases of large alocasia and colocasia that could shade shorter plants that could get crispy. Elephant ears is such a versatile plant, and although you think of it as shade because it's so tropical looking, both alocasia and colocasia can take full sun. But here's a tip. If you buy one from a nursery and it has been kept like undercover in that nursery or in a hothouse, you're going to think that I'm lying to you if you put it out in the sun, because it will not react well. Those first few leaves that thought they were going to live their lives always undercover are going to get very sad and sunburned, but the plant does adjust, and the next leaves will shine in the sun later on in the summer. So give that a try. Here's a funny feeling that I got from looking at somebody else's garden the other day. It came to my mind when Madeline Hooper mentioned in our interview that some of her friends questioned why she would grow coleus. I mean, I think coleus is a fabulous plant, and I don't understand why you would question if it's used just because it's easy to come by. To me, that smacks of like, how can you like Reese cups? They're available at every checkout counter. Huh, I still like them, and I like coleus. So that feeling came to me when I was at a friend's garden. She had recently moved to this place. It's a rental. It's lovely, and there's some fabulous plants all around it. Really nice features in the landscape, although way too much grass, but that's a whole other story. Don't get me started. She showed me that there was a collection of blueberry bushes right off of her porch, and she was flabbergasted that those would have been chosen. Can you believe it? Why would they have blueberries here? She asked in her beautiful southern accent. Well, she's a friend, the kind that I don't know well enough to be totally forthright, but I know her well enough to know that if I had been totally forthright, I wouldn't have gotten anywhere with her. She has strong opinions, so I simply nodded and I smiled. But I will tell you, dear listener, what I was thinking. The blueberries are the most fabulous plants, with pretty spring flowers, beautiful fruit to put on your grape nuts in the morning if you can get them away from the birds. And that's part of the fun of it too, right? And then fabulous fall color on the foliage, plus they're native. I never would have thought to put blueberries in this tiny garden, and yet there they are right outside my living room, and I couldn't be happier. But as Madeline Hooper said in another part of the interview that I hope you enjoyed, we each have our own gardens to play in. You don't need to impose your taste on anybody else or anybody else's taste on you. It's a happy accident that I inherited blueberries, and I never would have planted them here, but I am so loving on them. And they're here for good. For good blueberries, for good cute little flowers, for good fall foliage, and forever, as long as I live here. I think they're fantastic. I'm off to speak at the Charleston Horticultural Society next week. Well, actually, maybe about the time you're listening to this, because I have a little bit more editing to do. In the remote chance of you being able to react to that information, I will be speaking on Monday, May 6th, from 6 to 7 p.m. at the MUSC Drug Discovery Auditorium. Who knows what that is? 70 President Street, Charleston. I hope you can join us. I actually don't know if they're selling tickets or not, but even if they are, the Charleston Horticultural Society is a wonderful thing that would be worthy of your dollars. And maybe, since you're coming, you would appreciate listening to what I have to say. I generally speak about thoughtful gardening and how to be kind to your land and still have a beautiful garden. Hey, I mentioned that you all are my sponsors, and if you're new to the podcast and you'd like to contribute, you can support it on Spotify by following the links there, or you can go to my website, which is lhgardens.com, and you can click on the blog link, and you will see that I am not very good at writing blogs. There isn't one there recently, but if you go to any of the ones that I have written, you can find a link to buy me a cup of coffee. Just look for a photograph of a coffee cup on one of the blog posts, and that would be so lovely. And thank you so much for the people who already do that. I really, really appreciate it. I've got travel coming up, which means that my next garden chores are to teach my husband how to water all these plants. And the next podcast will be with Marianne Wilburn and me, and we're going to talk about, well, we're going to preview this fabulous trip that she has organized that I am taking at the end of May to England. Let me just get you salivating by mentioning some of the fabulous gardens that we'll be visiting. Chelsea Flower Show, which I can kind of take or leave, but I'll take it. I'll make it fun. Have a champagne. Waterperry Gardens, which is ironic because I spent so much time at Waterperry Farm last weekend in Earlysville, Virginia. Waterperry Gardens is a bit more famous over there in England. Going to the Oxford Botanic Garden, going to Rousham, going to Blenheim Palace, Kiftsgate, and a bunch of others, but I think that's enough to get your mouth watering. So we're going to see you next time, and we will get talking about all those gardens. But in the meantime, I hope you get out and enjoy yours.